saw that some of the classical apologists have branched off to dialogical apologetics and the cumulative case apologetics. So we looked at those three already, and we looked at evidentialism. So we looked at four of the 17 different ways. Now a presuppositionalism, so you got four there, and then five, you got testimonial apologetics, and six, comparative religious apologetics, and seven, cultural apologetics. We'll look at that in those in more depth later on. So you got one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, and then there's three different types of presuppositionalism. There's early Gordon Clark, there's later Gordon Clark, and then there's Van Til. Okay? So when everybody acts like, you know, Steve Callen's work, Five Views on Apologetics, and one is presuppositionalism, and it's written by John Frame. Nope. Frame was a student of Van Til, but he was a verificationalist because he allowed his presupposition to be tested and to be verified. So you actually have three types of presuppositionalism, and then there's verificationalists like John Frame, Francis Schaeffer, Edward J. Carnell, C.S. Lewis, very close to classical apologist, but the way he would describe his own approach would be more like a verificationalist, even though he had nothing to do with these guys. And so once we get through presuppositionalism and verificationalism, we'll have already covered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So we're actually making more progress than it looks like right now. But we'll start with Gordon Clark, and the early Clark his books I would really recommend you read someday are his Three Types of Religious Philosophy, An Introduction to Christian Philosophy, Religion, Reason, and Revelation, A Christian View of Men and Things, and then his History of Philosophy work, Thales de Dewey. I read probably about 20 to 25 of his books. Disagree with him on almost everything, but just really loved reading him because he was such a brilliant thinker. And so first we're going to look at his, what I would call, dogmatic presuppositionalism. So early Clark is dogmatic presuppositionalism, and it's very rational. He had a high view of human reason. Now later Clark is going to be called scripturalism. We'll get to that. Van Til's approach is going to be transcendental presuppositionalism. Okay, so let's look at Gordon Clark's dogmatic presuppositionalism. First off, he rejected traditional apologetics, which is both classical apologetics plus evidentialism. Okay, he believed that unaided human reason cannot find truths about God. When we say unaided human reason, he acts like people like Thomas Aquinas and classical apologists act like they don't need God at all to argue for God. And that sort. Look, God's the one who revealed himself to us in nature. So even our so-called unaided human reason is not really unaided, okay? But whatever the case, he rejected classical apologetics. Even though Augustine said, in his light we see light, and he quoted the psalmist, he's acting like, no, that's unaided human reason, cannot find truths about God. Well, You know, on any given reason, you can't find truth about anything. But he rejected traditional apologetics. He thought that you were compromising, if not being very blasphemous in using classical apologetics. He rejected empiricism, that we could find truth through the five senses. This you'd be better off looking at the notes than the textbook. That'll be probably, you'll be seeing just what I'm seeing. But he rejected empiricism, finding truth through the five senses. He argued that you could have get no knowledge from sense perception, and that induction is a fallacy. So in other words, deduction would be men are mortal. Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. So you start with the whole class, and then you argue to a particular in that class. And Clark will only argue deductively. So he's a real hyper-rationalist in that regard. Induction, you'd say, well, Socrates is a man, he died. Aristotle's a man, he died. Plato's a man, he died. Everybody that was born before 1840 has died. Therefore, man is mortal. And Gordon Clark would say, no, that's a fallacy. Because there might be somebody born in 2020 that doesn't die. Does Clark believe that would happen? No, but it's just like, logically speaking, induction, the only way, what's the only way induction can give you a necessary conclusion, a certain conclusion? If you're arguing from the part to the whole, what's the only way can arguing from different parts give you certainty about the whole?
If you have all the particulars in the set.
Yeah, exactly. So if we say, I'm mortal, you're mortal, you're mortal, you're mortal, we go through all seven of us, and then conclude all seven of us are mortal. Yeah, well, but the problem is, though, what's happened to that inductive argument? It's kind of become a deductive argument, yeah. Because now, once you have the whole set, you say, well, we know the whole set is mortal, so the whole set is mortal. And so Clark says induction is a fallacy. So what do you think his view of science is? No knowledge of sense perception, induction is a fallacy. He's a scientific anti-realist. Science gives us formulas that may work, but it doesn't give us any truth. So, he rejected rationalism. Now, be real careful about this. He rejected rationalism, but he loved rationalism to the point where Gordon Clark called him a rationalist. I mean, to where Norman Geiser called Gordon Clark a rationalist. Okay, he rejected rationalism in this. Reason works, you can deduce the things. The problem is, though, it cannot prove everything. Your first principles have to be presupposed. Remember when René Descartes was looking for something he couldn't doubt? Well, what Gordon Clark is saying is reason works, deduction works. The problem is, if reason could prove everything, then you'd have to be able to prove your first principles. But then your first principles are not your first principles. The reasons for them would be. But then they wouldn't be the first principles because you'd have to prove them. And you'd have an infinite regress and knowledge would never start. So he says, in the end he's going to say what we need is rationalism with a dogmatic presupposition. Okay? But he rejects just rationalism as it is. He also rejected irrationalism, kind of existentialism, thinking you got to get beyond reason or in the non-rational realm to find truth. He rejected irrationalism Because he said if we allow contradictions, all thought and communication become meaningless. He says unaided human reason always results in skepticism. He points to David Hume, the skeptical empiricist, Immanuel Kant, who said we can know reality as it appears to us, but not reality as it is. We're skeptical about that. And even in Hegel's thought, you end up with truth is always evolving. You never really attain to absolute truth. So he says unaided human reason is always going to end up in skepticism. So if you want to escape skepticism, if you want to claim that you can know something, you're going to need Gordon Clark's view. And his view is dogmatism. He argues that we should dogmatically presuppose the existence of the triune God and the truth of the Bible, the truth that he's revealed in the Bible.
So why not just embrace illuminationism?
His view is very different from that.
I'm just wondering why he went with dogmatism rather than...
Yeah, there are times he says some very nice things about Augustine, which is very rare for Gordon Clark to say nice things about anybody but Gordon Clark. But he does see... I think he saw his dogmatic presuppositionalism as a more coherent and perfected epistemology theory of knowledge than Augustine. But it's not like, God illuminates our minds to know the truth. In his view, he's trying to defend the faith, and he says, look, everybody's got to dogmatically presuppose, and it's rather arbitrary. It's a dogmatic, but it's kind of an arbitrary. You dogmatically presuppose something, and then you try to deduce truth from that. Because he's not going to accept induction. Okay? He's not going to accept innate ideas. He's not going to accept gut feelings or intuition. And so he says that we should dogmatically presuppose the existence of the triune God of the Bible, who has revealed his truth to us in the Bible. He also, though, assumes the law of non-contradiction, because he sees the law of non-contradiction. He calls it the law of contradiction. Everybody else calls it the law of non-contradiction, so I'm going to call it the law of non-contradiction. But he sees the law of non-contradiction as the basis of all right thinking, as the basis of logic. That A cannot equal non-A at the same time in the same way. Okay? And if we say God exists, that's tantamount to saying the statement God does not exist is false. Okay? Francis Schaeffer called this antithesis, where anything that opposes the truth or contradicts the truth is false. And Francis Schaeffer says, we're beyond that. We now try to synthesize contradictions to make new truth. And that's leading to the death of man, says Schaeffer. But he sees God as logic. He says, in the beginning was the Word, which is Logos. You could translate it, in the beginning was logic. And the logic was with God, and the logic was God. Okay? So I'll be honest with you. It seems to me that God is his attributes. God doesn't have love. He is love. And then he gives us love. So saying God is logic, I do not think is... Now, I think when we use reason, we're thinking God's thoughts after him. Okay, and God created us in his image. But, so keep in mind, what is his presupposition? It's going to be different from Van Til's, okay? We should dogmatically presuppose the existence of the triune God who has revealed himself in the scriptures, the truth of the Bible, and the law of non-contradiction. Now people say, well, why do you presuppose that? Well, he says, hey, look, everybody has to presuppose something. Reason has to start somewhere. So, there's no problem with me presupposing this. You got to presuppose something. So I arbitrarily choose to presuppose the existence of the triune God, the truth taught in the scriptures, and the law of non-contradiction. Now he says, look, since rationalism and empiricism have failed to make life meaningful, we should presuppose the truth of Christianity. He says that as he closes his dailies to do, his history of philosophy, he says, you want to go on the eternal merry-go-round of Nietzsche's eternal recurrence, or just wallow in post-Kantian skepticism, or are you open to a word from God? So that's the way he viewed his presupposition. It's like, look, it's either skepticism, an absurd world of skepticism, or God's given us a word. Let's presuppose. So we're believing it without reason, but let's presuppose that God, the triune God, exists, and he is logic, and he has revealed truth to us in his word. Okay? And Clark's response to Immanuel Kant is that God has fashioned the mind and the world so that they harmonize. So it's kind of like the categories of the mind do correspond to reality. Now, this seems to be part of the early Clark that seems to be rejected by the later Clark. But without presupposing God, Kant's dilemma remains. We can only know reality as it is, as it appears to us, not reality as it is. Clark says that only Christianity is self-consistent, doesn't contradict itself, gives meaning to life, and makes sense out of our moral experience. Now, here, he almost sounds like a verificationalist here. Almost sounds like he's saying, yeah, I'll open my presupposition to testing, and it's self-consistent, gives meaning to life, makes sense of the world. But that's not what he's doing. With him, it's just like, look, all the other views couldn't do what Christianity clearly does. So self-consistent gives meaning to life, makes sense of our moral experience. Only Christianity supports the existence of truth and the possibility of knowledge. Only Christianity supports... Oh, that line repeated itself twice. I don't know why. But Clark uses the law of non-contradiction to refute non-Christian belief systems. So he dogmatically presupposes the triune God and Christianity, but then he's able to use logic, because God is logic, the law of non-contradiction flows from his nature, he uses logic to refute non-Christian belief systems and shows that they're contradictory. Now, he's a Calvinist, so he believes we can't convince anyone of the truth of Christianity. Regeneration by God is necessary. And because he said that, he was asked, well, what do you say about a Muslim who presupposes the existence of Allah and the truth of the Quran? Gordon Clark's response was this. Instead of saying, all right, I'm going to point out the contradictions there. Instead of saying that, he said, God regenerates some and leaves others in their fallen state. So in the end, it makes you wonder, why are you even doing apologetics? Because either God regenerates you or he doesn't. So, you know, if he regenerates you, you're going to have the Clarkian presupposition. If he doesn't regenerate you, you're going to have a false presupposition. But it's all up to God who regenerates. It's not up to us. And Clark's solution to the problem of evil was that God predetermined what we will do. Man is not free. So Adam fell. Adam and Eve fell because God made them fall. Lucifer fell because God made him fall. So he says God is the ultimate cause of sin in his view, but man is the author and immediate cause of sin. Now we are responsible for our sin because God is above us, so we're responsible to him. However, there's no one above God to whom he could be responsible for. So he's a voluntarist on this point, where he believes that something is good or evil merely because God wills it to be good or evil, and you can't question God. It's like you're standing, it's like God is standing on the roof of a 20-story building, you're standing next to him, and there's a person standing next to you right on the edge of the building. And God pushes you because you're not free. In his view, remember Jean-Paul Sartre, the French atheist existentialist, said if God is free, then man is not free. But since man is free, then God doesn't exist. See, in his view of freedom, if man is free, there can't be any God over him. Clark agrees. But Clark believes in God, so man can't be free. So, in Clark's view, God pushes me, I fall against the other guy, he falls off the roof, I'm guilty of murder. Now God's the cause of me pushing the guy off the roof, but I'm responsible to God for my actions, even though he made me do it. I'm responsible to him. Why? Because he's bigger than me. Is God responsible for his actions? No, because there's nobody bigger than God for him to be responsible to. So what you end up having is God's power is so emphasized that some theologians would say, man, this, you're pretty light on the love of God. But the power of God is just magnified to some would call the God of Gordon Clark an ogre. Others would compare the God of Gordon Clark to Allah, the God of Islam, in some ways.
Yeah.
Now Clark's dogmatic presuppositionalism in his later works evolved. He died in 1985. Later evolved into scripturalism. Scripturalism is the view that truth can only be found in the scriptures. There's no knowledge attainable by the senses or through any other means. His disciples, after his death, were trying to find the axioms of geometry in the scriptures. Because the axioms of geometry are not real truths if you can't find it in the scriptures. So you've got to understand, sola scriptura, of the reformers meant, you know, solely scriptures. The scriptures alone are the final authority for faith and practice. Sola scriptura is not scripturalism. The reformers did not believe truth can only be found in the scriptures. Okay? If truth can only be found in the scriptures, then why investigate a murder? Okay? When you investigate a murder, you're looking for evidence outside of the scriptures to prove the truth of what happened. Okay? And so here this guy went from having a low view of God revealing himself through nature to the point where there's nothing revealed in nature.
How do you respond to transcript debates?
What's that?
How do you respond to transcript debates and translations?
Let me tell you, he had a Bible in his hand. He was at Dallas Theological Seminary. I listened to it on tape a few years before he died. And they asked him, how do you know, if you're going to presuppose the truth in the Bible, how do you know that's a Bible in your hand? And you know what his response was? What but? You hear the whole audience were a bunch of Christians just went, okay? And rises from the dead, why appear to the apostles if no truth can be found through sense experience, through sense perception? Okay? And so he claims his view is very, very biblical, but it's actually not. But keep in mind, there's two different forms of presuppositionalism right there. Early Clark is dogmatic presuppositionalism. Later Clark is scripturalism. Gordon Clark even said truth, all truth is propositional. What he meant was truth is just, it's almost like we're just computer code. He was even asked late in life if he was an idealist. In other words, do you believe only ideas exist and there's no real physical world? And his response was really weird. His response was, I only wrote on epistemology, I never wrote on metaphysics. In other words, I never told you what my philosophical worldview was. I just told you about how man knows. Let me tell you, when you share your view of knowledge, how man attains knowledge, it often will give big hints about your metaphysical views, your views of reality. And but he got to the point where people wondered, is he saying only propositions exist? So even this desk, is that just propositions that God pumped into me? You know, is this like a virtual reality world which would get me to say proposition statements about this, but in reality this is just propositions? He, you know, in one work, in his final work, it's not really the Nestorian heresy, because Clark defined persons in a way like nobody else did, but because he defined persons as a list of propositions that are true about an entity. So, you know, I was born January 1st, 1960. That's one of the propositions. But all Phil Fernandez is to Gordon Clark is a list of true propositions about an entity we call Phil Fernandez, but the entity is not really there, it's just the propositions. This is why late in his life, another philosopher who was on staff with him, I'll tell you after the film was over the guy's name, but he told me that late in his life, the other professors, the other departments were witnessing to Gordon Clark. Because he reduced everything to the realm of propositions. He said Jesus is two persons. Now it sounds like the Nestorian heresy. What he's saying is there's a list of propositions that describe Jesus the man, and there's a list of propositions, you know, Jesus is omniscient, omnipotent. Jesus didn't know the day or the hour of his return. Jesus got tired. So there's a set of propositions that don't match up well or contradict this set of propositions. Well, traditional theologians, classical theologians said that's because Jesus is one person with two distinct natures that don't blend. Gordon Clark, since persons are just a list of propositions, you can just toss aside the whole talk of natures. And so very like rational and all, but it's almost like you're writing computer code. We're God's written computer code, pretty much. Okay? So it's he starts out acting like my view is biblical, and by the end of it, it's like people are wondering, do you even believe there's a created physical world? When he debated David Hoover, David Hoover was talking about the material world, matter, and Gordon Clark said, I have 9 different science textbooks with 9 different contradictory definitions of what matter is. If you'd like, I'll let you read these definitions. You tell me which one you hold to, and then I'll tell you why it's wrong, why it's false. But basically, you couldn't say a word without Gordon Clark telling you you got to define your term. You're talking about matter. What do you mean by matter? And, you know, now there's some truth to what he's saying. Because matter, you know, when we say matter, matter is like, you know, a physical thing. We say, well, this this pulpit is a solid thing. Well, the closer we examine it, the more empty space we find. So a lot of times we say, when matter tells me, my senses tell me this thing is solid, a lot of times what we're saying is material things are things that appear to us to be a certain way. And, you know, but there are some Christian idealists. I'm not one. If idealism turns out to be true, I'll let God explain it to me when we get there. But I think there is a real world outside the mind. God did create a physical world, and that it's more than just a virtual reality. But whatever the case, that's Gordon Clark. We'll look at Van Til next week, and then I'll bring in a critique of both Clark and Van Til. Talk about strengths in their views, weaknesses with their views, and then a general critique of presuppositionalism. And then we'll talk about the kind of the grandchildren of the presuppositionalists, which will be the verificationalists.